This is Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Many of California's elected officials have been speaking out against President Trump's executive orders on immigration. Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein introduced a bill this week to rescind the order limiting travel to the U.S. by some Muslims and refugees. It was blocked by Arkansas Republican Tom Cotton. While Republicans control both houses of Congress, California's delegation looks much different. In fact, according to the LA Times, 40 of the state's 53 representatives in Washington, all Democrats, have expressed their opposition to the executive order via social media or official statements. Representative Jack Speer of Hillsborough said, quote, "We already do exhaustive vetting." Representative Barbara Lee of Oakland said, quote, "This is not who we are." And Representative Mark DeSaunier of Concord called it, quote, "morally reprehensible and unconstitutional." So we wanted to dig into that statement. Is the president's executive order constitutional? So we contacted Julia Harumi Mass, a senior staff attorney with the ACLU of Northern California, who leads their work on immigration rights. KLW's Ben Trefney sat down to talk with her in studio.
What are your biggest constitutional and legal concerns with President Trump's executive orders that he's passed so far?
The executive order that seeks to enforce, you know, immigration law against every single person. He's also included ramping up the number of ICE agents. Tripling the number of ICE agents and adding, I think, 5,000 Border Patrol agents. We already have a militarized border that creates a what some of us call like a constitution-free zone at the border. Border agents can and do search people and cars without reasonable suspicion of criminal activity. And we expect to see even greater abuses, including, you know, we already see deaths at the border and shootings and all kinds of terrible violence. And we expect to see those conditions get worse. We also expect to see with the massive enforcement and there was a provision in one of the executive orders that said that they were going to expedite their processes. Well, that means that people are going to have less fairness in the process, that they will have, you know, fewer opportunities to go in front of judges and to assert their rights.
Well, already under President Obama, there was a gross shortage of immigration judges. It was actually a bit of a crisis, I think, and something that I know in the Bay Area, many immigration case judges were complaining about before these ideas about making it more strict.
Exactly. There's a huge backlog. And also, President Trump seems to really be focused on detaining people in even greater numbers than they already have been. We think immigration detention is likely to expand exponentially. With increased enforcement and increased detention and fewer opportunities to be released into the public, that's going to be a huge cost for the taxpayer.
These were actually part of one of the executive orders where he said the only options that that ICE agents would have would be to either detain or deport, right? Rather than something that people have been saying, which seems like a very derogatory way of putting it, catch and release.
Right. People aren't fish. That's right. Detain or deport. Those are the options, which means that people are going to be spending a lot of time in detention facilities. And in a way, immigration detention is already a big exception to the normal rules of under the Due Process Clause of our Constitution, because in the criminal justice system, if you're arrested, you're entitled to a hearing. You're entitled to post bail, and you're entitled to a hearing in front of a judge that gets to determine how much the bail should be based on your ability to pay, the risk you pose to the community, etc. In the immigration system, there are vast numbers of people, tens of thousands of people every day who are in immigration custody without the right to a hearing, and not because they're serving a sentence or being tried for a crime, but because the government has decided that they want to deport these people, and because the government has asserted that they're not entitled to a right to a hearing. So one example was a client we had who was a grandmother. She was from Central America, and as a child, her family suffered from a lot of hunger. And she was in custody and subject to what's called mandatory detention based on a pretty minor criminal history for which she'd spent only a few days in any kind of criminal justice confinement for stealing small food items. But she was held in immigration detention for over a year while she fought her case. And she wasn't even given an option to go in front of a judge to seek a bond hearing, to seek release on her own recognizance or by paying a bond amount until we went to federal court and challenged that practice as applied to her.
With the orders that led to so many demonstrations across airports all over the weekend, what do you see as being legally allowable by executive order and not legally allowable?
So just to back up, in this executive order, he suspended all refugee settlement for the 120 days and indefinitely suspended the refugee resettlement of people from Syria. That raises serious concerns under our obligations under international human rights treaties and is just so contrary to our history as a nation.
I have some statistics on that, actually.
Let's hear them.
According to the Migration Policy Institute, the U.S. resettled almost 70,000 refugees in fiscal year 2013 and granted asylum to another 25,000 plus. And the U.S. is the world's top resettlement country for refugees. Is that correct? Because, I mean, the U.S. isn't even geographically close to a lot of other countries that are dealing with refugee situations right now.
That's my understanding as well.
But that's being reversed almost completely then.
Yes. In addition, the banning of all entries of nationals from 7 majority Muslim countries for 90 days and providing that that ban may be extended to additional countries raises a lot of serious concerns. It raises concerns about religious discrimination.
Unconstitutional
religious discrimination in violation of this country's establishment clause. When he was a candidate, Donald Trump repeated several times that he wanted to have a registry of Muslims, that he wanted to ban all Muslims from entering the United States. When people called foul and said, that's religious discrimination, we don't do that, he backed up and said, oh, no, we're just going to ban people from certain countries, majority Muslim countries. But we know, based on his prior statements, that this is very connected to this anti-Muslim religious intolerance, and that's discrimination, and it's not allowed under our Constitution.
Isn't it blatantly religious discrimination to say we're going to favor Christian?
Definitely.
Migrants?
Yes, definitely. That was a particular aspect of the executive order, is that there will be an exception made for Christians from those countries where you're fleeing persecution based on your Christianity. That's a explicit exception in the executive order, which it would be difficult to be more clear about your religious preference and discrimination.
What do you see as happening from a legal standpoint? ACLU has been filing lawsuits around the country, and the intent, though, of the administration seems relatively clear. Will they end up being able to sort out some sort of legal avenues to reach their goals? What do you see?
I see a big fight. I mean, we're going to have a lot of big fights. It's pretty clear. Donald Trump is taking extreme positions. The cabinet, you know, the folks that he's assigning to lead his administration are taking extreme positions and have taken extreme positions. We see with the first week's worth of executive orders, tremendously illegal and unconstitutional policies, or policies that can only be carried out through enforcement actions that are going to, you know, run roughshod over the Constitution. For example, trying to deport 11 million people is going to require going back to things like workplace raids and neighborhood sweeps and picking people up.
Going back to, you say, when are you referring back to?
Well, the last time we saw big neighborhood sweeps and workplace raids in California or in Northern California that I recall was around 2008. But there was a strong reaction to that. The ACLU at that time got involved by filing a Freedom of Information Act request to try to find out what was going on. I remember I couldn't believe the stories I was hearing from community members. ICE agents were going into apartments in the morning after one person had left and left the door unlocked. ICE agents literally just went right in, rousted people from their beds and from their showers, and brought them together and interrogated them and demanded their papers, and then, you know, packed people up and took them into immigration custody. That was grossly unconstitutional, violated the Fourth Amendment right against unreasonable searches and seizures. And we pushed back. We pushed back by bringing these practices to light and by talking with elected officials. There was a young boy, a six-year-old from the Canal District in San Rafael, who was a U.S. citizen. He was picked up with his father, and he was held in detention all day. We represented him in a damages case against ICE. And I remember at that time, there were so many school administrators speaking out because the children were just traumatized, and schools had become places where people couldn't learn because there was so much fear and despair. We're gonna fight back. We're gonna fight back against unconstitutional, abusive actions, and we're already preparing. We're gonna make sure that people know how to defend themselves, and we're gonna make sure that people know to document what's happening and to report what's happening so that we can bring those lawsuits. We can bring lawsuits to enjoin those abusive practices.
So there are many sanctuary cities around the Bay Area that maybe treat being a sanctuary city in different ways. But if Immigration and Customs Enforcement has the federal authority to find and deport any and all undocumented immigrants, what can a sanctuary city do about that? How would that make a difference?
Well, I'm glad you asked. It's important that people understand that being a sanctuary city doesn't mean that the city can keep ICE from making arrests in the city. What it means is that a city or a county or a school district has decided that they're not going to help. They're not going to provide assistance for immigration enforcement. And they make those decisions so that the whole community can thrive. You know, police departments that decide they're not going to help in immigration enforcement do that so that victims and witnesses feel safe coming forward and can work with the police, and so that the whole community can be safer. Those are extremely important interests for our local government, cities and counties, schools and health departments, fire departments. We really need everyone to work together and everyone to feel comfortable using services so that the whole community can thrive and be safer and more healthy. And it's also important in terms of, it does have an impact on immigration enforcement. Another piece that is part of Donald Trump's executive order on the interior had to do with working with local law enforcement agencies and to sign up as many police and sheriffs as he can to enforce federal immigration law. But a majority, I think a majority of Americans really think that our immigration laws aren't fair and that we shouldn't try to deport every single person who's here without authorization. So why would cities and counties want to participate in the enforcement of a law that isn't fair and that doesn't allow judges even to exercise discretion and avoid removing people who are contributing greatly to the society?
Well, in part because there's a threat of millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars being withheld by the federal government. Is that actually legal for the federal government to do? I mean, the San Francisco city and county receives over $1 billion a year of federal funds, which I don't think all of it could be withheld by the federal government, but some of it could. Is it legal? How much is it legal for Donald Trump to withhold? Because that actually would be an incentive for cities and states to help out the federal government.
Trump does not have the legal authority to carry out his threat to defund cities and states that protect people's rights without regard to immigration status. Congress has never authorized the president to defund states and localities that steer clear of the deportation business. And if Congress did enact such a law, it would be struck down as unconstitutional. Trump is trying to bypass Congress, and he can't do it.
When will that be shown? Because that people still think that might happen.
Well, I think, again, there are going to be some big fights. The leadership in California has been very clear.
Absolutely.
All of the mayors that have stood up and said, we're not backing down from these policies. We believe in our local policies, and we're protecting our communities. This is critical. And I think there are going to be some fights, and we're going to see it play out. So, you know, if the federal government threatens to defund a city or a particular program, that's going to have to be analyzed with respect to that program, what that money's for. But it would be arbitrary and not make any sense to defund education because a city has a policy that says we're not going to spend our city resources enforcing federal law. That's federal responsibility.
Julia Harumi Mass is an attorney with the ACLU of Northern California. She spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. You can hear an extended version of that conversation, including discussions of border policing and sanctuary cities, all at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. The Trump administration has threatened to withhold federal funding from sanctuary cities. That includes Oakland, San Jose, and San Francisco. Those cities limit local law enforcement and city agencies in helping enforce federal immigration laws. Yesterday, San Francisco City Attorney Dennis Herrera filed a lawsuit saying withholding that money would be illegal. At a press conference announcing the suit, Herrera said this.
The federal government can't put a financial gun to the head of local and state governments. That remains true no matter who is in charge in Washington, D.C. President Trump's executive order tries to turn city and state employees into federal immigration officers. That is unconstitutional.
So what do you think about so-called sanctuary cities? Do you support the idea, or do you think they should fully cooperate with federal authorities? Call us with your opinions at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and you may hear yourself on the air.